MacCast, Friday, August 17th, 2012. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. Got a good show for you today because I invited my friends Victor Cahiao and Ken Ray to come on the show and talk to us about the latest stuff that's been happening in the Apple and the Mac community. And it was a lot of fun, as always. These are what we call our Three Amigos shows. We've been friends, actually became friends through podcasting, but been friends for years now, probably since the very first podcast expo. I don't know if any of you were there, but I think that's where I originally met Ken Ray, and I think I had known Victor before that, but I don't know if we had met in person. It's, you know, my memory fails me. I should probably ask this question when I have them on the show, but I invited them on, and we had a great time chatting about, you know, what's been happening with all of the rumors surrounding the new iPhone 5 and iPad mini. Also talked a little bit about what happened with the whole Honan hacking situation, although we didn't get into that too much because that's kind of been covered. And I was able to ask them what they thought of Mountain Lion. So it was a lot of fun sitting down with them. I hope you enjoy this episode. But before we get into that, I do want to take a quick moment and thank one of my show sponsors. That's Circus Ponies, makers of Notebook. If you haven't checked out Notebook yet, what are you waiting for? You need to head over to the website. You need to download your free copy and just take a look at it. I really think you'll be impressed. If you have the need to take notes, and we all do, right, get better organized, if you're doing research, I really like it for research. I think for me, that's the killer use for it, to be able to do things like the web clippings feature, which is really unique. And it's great because it works through the services that are built into macOS 10. So you can take your notebook, and on any page, any section, you can define a little clipping location. You add this little clipping service. And then what'll happen is when you're in Mail or when you're in Safari or Chrome or whatever application you are writing text in, if you want to reference something, if you want to copy something out, you just select a bit of text, go to the services menu, and you'll see Circus Ponies there and your little clipping. And it'll say the name of the notebook, and you can clip it right into not only the notebook, but that section in a notebook. So you can set up multiple clippings in different sections. And once they're in there, they're actually cross-referenced. You can get back to the original source. So if you clipped it out of an email, there's links back to your email. There's snapbacks to the web page in your browser. So you can go back if you want to re-reference the article and find it later. How many times have you had a hard time finding something? You remember reading something, maybe you copy and pasted a section of text out to reference, but where did it come from? Well, you don't have to remember it with Circus Ponies Notebook because you can just click the little link and jump right back. And that's just one of literally dozens, if not hundreds, of features. I never counted every feature that's in there, but just a very versatile application, and I think you'll really like it. They've been around in the Mac community for years, and they're making great stuff. And I got a sneak peek at something brand new. So in about a week, be listening on the MacCast, be watching your feeds, be watching the Circus Ponies website, because they have a new app coming, and I think a lot of you are going to really like it. And I'm not going to say any more than that. I almost got myself into trouble. Anyway, check them out, circusponies.com, and a big thank you to them for their support of the MacCast. So let's jump right into our Three Amigos conversation with Victor Cahiao and Ken Ray. Here you go. Enjoy. Hey, Victor, how you doing?
Great, Adam. How are you?
Good. Welcome back to the MacCast. It's good to get you back on here again. And of course, Ken, how are you doing, Ken?
I am doing well, sir. How are you?
Yeah. How was your trip? I know you just got back from a trip, right?
Dude, that trip was awesome. That trip was so awesome. That trip was crazy awesome.
Do you want to tell everybody what you were doing?
I went to Las Vegas for the Star Trek convention because I just... And I'll mention this again later, and maybe halfway through.
And every, you should, because it's
every
very
5 minutes, if you'll let me. I'm doing a new podcast with Roddenberry Entertainment called Mission Log, a Roddenberry Star Trek podcast. And we go through and we analyze every episode of Star Trek. Theoretically, I will be doing this podcast, or someone will be doing this podcast, for the next 13 and a half years, unless, and that's going one a week. That's not taking summer hiatus. That's nothing. That's one a week, starting with Star Trek, the original series. And then we're not sure if we go next to the animated series or if we go to Next Generation. But either way, it'll be every television series and probably the movies as well. And just tearing them apart and just analyzing them for not so much like, you know, well, it's stupid, continuity error here, problem there. It's more like messages and morals and trying to figure out if it stands the test of time, both from a message standpoint and from a production standpoint. And so we've actually been talking about doing this for about 8 months. And it finally launched this week at the Star Trek convention. And not to use a trite phrase, but if you're even half a Star Trek fan, boldly go, because it is the coolest thing you will ever do. And I will tell you, I thought I was going to go there and really just do what I had to do and then probably go sit by the pool or maybe go by Old Town Vegas or something like that. Mm-hmm. I never left the Rio, except for when I went to dinner with people that I didn't even know before I got there, because I just met some really cool people. And it's like, hey, let's go to dinner. Of course, let's go to dinner, because we've obviously known each other for, what, like an hour and a half now? Absolutely, let's go to dinner. I mean, it was really just, it reminded me in some ways of Macworld, except I had even less that I had to do. And wow. So really, it was just twice as much fun. So cool. Yeah, anyway, that's what I did. So yes, it was a good trip, and I'm still jet lagged, but yeah.
Well, we appreciate you coming on to chat with us. We don't have any real formal thing to talk about. I think where we probably should start, I'm curious to know from you guys, Mountain Lion, have you guys upgraded, Victor?
Yeah, I have. In fact, I talk about bold. I just went the first day with both my machines, even the production machine. I had one hesitation not to do it on my production machine. That's a piece of hardware that I have for audio. That's always the one thing that. But these guys were ready, and it's been very, very smooth. I haven't had any problems at all. Neither machine. It's been easy peasy.
So you jumped in day one with your production machine. I'm assuming you just did the download over the top.
I did.
Install.
I did. I did. You know, I did do the save a version first off to a USB drive, so I would have a full version. But other than that, yeah, I did it pretty much the normal way.
And you can.
Same thing. I've only had one problem. I use Wiretap Studio to record the system audio sometimes, because, you know, sometimes I'll do goofy little things on Mac OS X or Day 6 or on the Star Trek show now, where I'm using some of the built-in computer voices.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, every time I try to record the Mac audio or the system audio, it crashes. And it crashes. I mean, it's not like Wiretap Studio doesn't crash. My machine comes up with that gray screen that says you need to restart your computer. So I'm looking forward to either Wiretap Studio coming out with an update, which I haven't checked over the past couple of days, so maybe they already have, or to whatever needs to be fixed, getting fixed in 10.8.1. Now, what's weird is I can record like line in with Wiretap Studio, but it's not showing me like any of the other audio sources. The only two choices it'll give me are either line in or Mac audio. And then when I try Mac audio, it just comes to a screeching halt. So maybe there's something weird about my system. I don't know if anybody else has had that problem. Barring that, though, that's the only problem I've had. Everything else has been very smooth. And I think I can't remember if I talked to you about this, Adam, but I know I talked to somebody that same week. It feels zippier than Lion did, but I don't know if that's just because it's new, and so I think it's that, or if it actually is, but... That's the one problem that I've had. Unfortunately, it ended up being, you know, kind of a problem for me since I was actually relying on that. But otherwise, it's been totally cool.
Yeah, audio always seems to be one of those things. That's always what breaks for me too, Victor. It's like some piece of audio equipment that has an odd driver, and then it just doesn't work. Yeah. So on the speeder thing though, Ken, I had heard several people kind of say that it feels zippier. Have you noticed that too, Victor?
Yeah, I think a little bit it does feel zippier just all around. I think it's just so much better integrated. I mean, just complete system-wide, that I think that's part of what makes it feel zippier. Everything is tied together, you know, in almost every application, much more than I think it ever has been before. As I downloaded it and as I used it, it seemed like it was almost like not a lot happened, but I don't know if you guys read Siracusa's 25,000 word go over on this, but really there's just a lot going on. They actually replaced quite a bit in the back end. It's a lot bigger than we all think.
Huh, interesting. Did you read that, Ken? I haven't gotten through the whole thing yet, I don't think.
It's always quite a
tome to kind of figure out what's going on there. But so Victor, you kind of read and know what's going on under the hood. I'm curious to get from you guys how you feel about it from just using it. Because to me, I have not done my production system yet because I'm in the middle of some like pretty big projects. And being a web developer, I have a lot of stuff under the hood like Apache and MySQL and things that I've customized. And every time I do an upgrade, I have to kind of rebuild all that stuff. So it takes me typically longer than it would other people, and I like to do a clean install, and I really need to do a clean install because I didn't do one, a full one, the way I really like it with Lion. So I want to get to that. But I did install it on my MacBook Air, and to me, the biggest thing was it went so smoothly, and everything's been running so well, I just really haven't noticed that much of a change, I guess. It's sort of like, what's new here? I mean, beyond the obvious notification center that's like in your face, everything else just seems like, oh yeah, it's Mac OS X. Has that been your experience, Ken? Beyond the audio thing, of course.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, now in fairness, it's also been a busy couple of weeks for me since it came out, or how long has it been now? 3 weeks, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I haven't tried. Every now and then I'll see somebody, you know, say on Twitter, or somebody told me the other day that they were actually messaging me using the new dictation feature. And I that was one of the things I was actually most interested in trying out, and I haven't. So
you should.
Yeah, so, I mean, I, if you don't go and look for new stuff, then it's kind of hard to find new stuff, I guess. I mean, and that's both a good thing and a bad thing about Mountain Lion, I think. No, I mean, except for the Notification Center, which has been really helpful. And of course, they're being able to tweet from everywhere. Although, generally speaking, I'm not somebody who tweets links. So that hasn't been like a gigantic thing for me. I mean, except for those things, I mean, you're right. For me, it's just kind of been OS X, maybe a little smoother, maybe a little better. But I haven't gone looking for the stuff that was decidedly new. So you're both saying the dictation thing is something I should try?
Oh, yeah. For emails, too. Oh, absolutely. It works really, really well. At least I have found it to work well. You know what? The big thing about this version is the iCloud integration, and I'm just too chicken to go there all the way. You know, I'm hooked into my Dropbox methodology and I love that. And, you know, when we talk about documents anywhere, and then even before this whole thing happened recently with the, you know, the big intrusion there, the wiping of the machines, it's just a really scary step for me with the type of user that I've been. I guess I'm just still a control freak. But for the masses, this is the big deal, having this entire iCloud integration with documents and so on. I mean, that's really one of the biggest engines there. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm not using it yet. I'm not pushing that button yet.
I'm feeling it's a little intrusive the way it's implemented, too, because it's sort of the front and center thing when you use the open dialog box now. It sort of defaults to, for the applications it's enabled in, which is most of the Apple apps, I believe. You know, it's like on the cloud or in the cloud. I forget what the tab says, right? It's iCloud or something like that. And then you have documents in the cloud. That's it. Yep. And then you have the On My Mac, which is the other tab, but that's not the default one. And so for someone like you or me, where, you know, I do want to keep the majority of my stuff local, there's a rare instance where I might decide, yeah, I want to put something in the cloud because I want to get access to it on my iPad. But, you know, you're right. I'm ingrained with Dropbox. I just have been.
It feels like, okay, where is this? Well, with Dropbox, I can cut, you know, I can see it, I can manage the folders, I can nest them. Again, I'm probably not thinking iOSification. I'm not going where Apple wants me to go on this one. They really want to take me by the hand and trust the cloud, and I'm just not there. I have to be able to have control of that stuff to move it the way I want to, you know, to be able to make aliases or that kind of thing, and I'm not there yet, but.
Well, yeah, and I could even see it causing problems for even a new user, because even a new user, someone who's, you know, kind of new to the Mac, is used to, say they're coming from Windows, they're used to a traditional file system. So they're going to pop open a document. It's going to say on the cloud. They might not even notice that they're putting it in iCloud. It's just sort of the default place, right? And so you create your new document, saves it to the cloud, you close the app, and where'd it go?
Yeah, it's just a big bucket. It's just one big bucket. It's not a series of folders. You know, people tend to work in projects and folders and in schemes, and this is just like a big bucket, and magically it'll be there.
Yeah, but not until you open the app again either. So, if they've quit the app and now they're in the Finder and they're like, where's that document? I don't know that many people intuitively are going to know you open the app, right? No, I mean, maybe not.
We're old men. No, we're old men.
I know, you're right.
That is absolutely what it is, and we need to get over it. And the problem is none of the three of us are going to, not anytime soon.
Right.
But I mean, when I think about it and when I think about why they want me to do that, the reason they want me to do that is because in the relatively near future, I want to say 3 to 5 years maybe, they're looking at this kind of thing where I walk into my house and there's my data. Mm-hmm. It's not on a machine. It's not on my phone. It's not on my iPad. It's not on my TV. It's not in my computer. It's just there. There's my data. And wherever I am, as long as I've got whatever I talked to George earlier this week about the Wired journalist hack. Mm-hmm. As long as I've got my two-factor verification. So I've got my voice maybe and my password that I can type in, or my voice and one of my iOS devices or whatever it is. Wherever I am, there's my stuff. I get the point of iCloud. The problem that I have with it is right now I don't need it. Right. And I kind of want to go ahead with Apple on it. But I mean, the second I turn it on, I've already maxed out the free 5 gigabytes. And so I'm not going to try it for the amount of money that they're talking about. But it's where we have to go, right? It's where we're headed. It's just none of us want to go there.
It's also platform independent, though. You know, you have to be an Apple-only person. And there's many, many of us that for whatever reason, work, business, whatever, we still have to live in a Windows world sometimes. And, this is where Dropbox or something that is not platform dependent can really help. I mean, hopefully Apple will make it so that it isn't. It's available to Windows users like they have in the iOS world. But right now, it's just, it's too big of a step.
Well, yeah. I mean, but the good thing right now is we're not locked into it. I mean, you still do have that other tab. You can still manage everything the old way. I was just surprised at how front and center that is in some applications. And I'm curious to see if, you might be totally right, Ken. It might just be logical for someone who this is how they're going to grow up with a file system and with managing documents. And it could just be that we're old men. And so I'm happy that I can still do it. I can still do Dropbox. So we still have those choices. The question will be for how much longer. Is it
right?
I think a couple more versions, but I could see the day when the traditional Finder is not there anymore. It's just this, hey, here's open the app. There's your documents.
Yeah. And, on the other hand,
maybe Siri grows to a point where you can say, Siri, where's that letter I was writing yesterday? I mean, once it actually moves, onto the Mac. And that was actually one of the most surprising things to me about Mountain Lion, and of course we've had a long time to know that it wasn't coming, but to find that Siri wasn't coming to Mountain Lion was really surprising to me. It's going to happen at some point because that's part of that whole, holistic thing. I mean, I can't be able to just ask my phone for what I want or ask my iPad for what I want, but still have to sit down and go to a file system on my Mac, on my computer, or on my tabletop, or on my television, or whatever the thing is going to be.
Sure.
That's going to be the big home computing device. So, is that going to be some kind of desktop? Maybe. Weird, but okay.
Maybe you could ask your phone for it, and then it could open it on your desktop.
Oh, there's an interesting idea.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, if I'm missing something, anybody out there listening, where there is a way that I can see that file structure, let me know. I mean, I could just be missing it.
There actually is. Somebody did an article, and I don't have, because I have my production machine here and I'm not sitting in front of my MacBook Air. There's some new place, I want to say it's in your library folder, and I can't remember if it's the system root one or your home one, but there is actually a place. It might have been Ted Landau who from Mac Observer who wrote up a piece on where that was. He might have even done it because he also writes for Macworld. It might have been a Macworld piece that he wrote, but somebody pointed out where that stuff is, the files are actually stored. So it does save a local copy. It does do the Dropbox sort of thing where it has a local version and then syncs a version up to iCloud.
Okay, so I'm going to guess it's probably in the library mobile documents.
Yes, that's it.
Where it is. Yeah, okay.
Can you see it in there? And
I can see, yeah, I can see that there's some stuff in there. I haven't looked deep enough to see if they are just plain old documents, but that's good.
I think some of them are package files.
That's what I was going to say.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, I know that's how the Pages documents are.
Yeah, that's interesting. But on the other hand, you've got some wonderful thing in this version too, like airplane mirroring, which is just rocks. I happen to have newer Macs that can do it, and it's wonderful. You know, I'm using that all the time, sitting in bed and, you know, using my big screen TV as a monitor. It's great.
Yeah, it's interesting on that. I'm still a little bit baffled by the system requirements for that, because that's not available on all of the models, I think, that run Mountain Lion, correct?
That's right. No, it's not.
Like Air Parrot, is it Air Parrot that's the one that'll let you run it on Lion? I mean,
I think so. I don't know what the application is called. So, yeah.
I think there's one called Air Parrot, or I think I used one called Air Display. I mean, there's a couple third-party apps that would let you sort of mirror two AirPlay devices on, you know, non-Mountain Lion Macs, and a lot of Macs that aren't supported by Apple. But, you know, like all things, it's probably one of those situations where Apple tested everything and they will only let it run on machines where they know it's going to run flawlessly, right? So they kind of make a cutoff. And so I haven't been able to obviously test the other versions on every system. So maybe there's some performance issues there because of, you know, graphics processors or what have you. Have you guys run across anything in Mountain Lion that maybe surprised you, or any kind of little tricks or functionality that you weren't expecting to run across, a tip or a trick or something like that, Victor?
Adam, on my MacBook Air, I was noticing that no matter what I set the sleep to, it was still going to sleep. I couldn't just like, don't go to sleep if I didn't want it to.
Yeah.
So I can't reference right now who it was that I found this tip from, but there is a terminal command that you can put in, and it's just the word caffeinate space minus T, and then put a big number like 90,000 after that. That's seconds. Mm-hmm. And then that will ensure that your Mac literally will not go to sleep if you don't want it to, because I was noticing even when on the control panel when I would tell it not to, it would still eventually, you know, do something. So there you go. That's a little terminal trick for that.
It was power napping, but not in the way you want it to power nap.
Exactly. This one will definitely make it just stay awake like if it had been doing coffee shots all night long.
Oh, that's weird. So I guess that's something else we could talk about, is if you guys have run across any little funky bugs. Have you guys noticed, speaking of the power thing, have either of you noticed reduced battery life? I guess that's the one thing that I had been reading about online. And I have to say, my MacBook Air, I think when it's not plugged in, it is kind of getting a little less battery.
I had not noticed. Nope.
Hey, you know, it's one of those things that if it is happening, it's negligible for me. Now, I work at home most of the time.
Right.
So, although when I was flying, I actually added a couple of shows while I was on my way out and did a little bit of writing as well, and didn't come close to losing power. So, I mean, it's not eating through battery like, you know, yeah, like a dingo eats your baby. Hello. Sorry. It's not eating through like that. It's right. More like, I mean, it feels to me sometimes like I shouldn't be plugging in as often as I am. But again, you know, since I mostly work from home, I don't know. I can't really tell.
To me, it seemed like it was draining when it was asleep, and I had to wonder because my MacBook Air does support that new power nap feature, so it can wake itself up even when the screen is closed to kind of do maintenance things, right?
Right.
So sync from iCloud and get notifications and all that fun stuff. So I have to wonder if there's something in that algorithm that, you know, maybe it's just drawing too much power when it's doing those sorts of actions. I don't know, but I did kind of notice that. You know, I had a couple small ones that I gave people, like in the icon view, I guess the little sliders back. Did you guys notice that?
Yeah, I did notice that.
Little resize the icon slider that came back. So that was kind of interesting to see. I'm trying to think of anything else that I've run across. I haven't been using it a whole lot to really notice things. Yeah, Victor?
I got a couple more if you want. There's one that I know is new to Mountain Lion, and it's a three-finger dictionary lookup.
Oh, yeah.
That is a very cool feature. You have to turn it on in System Preferences, and they call it lookup. And then anywhere you're at in a system at any time, if you are over a word and then you do a three-finger tap, it'll bring up this floating pane with a dictionary lookup of what that word is and all that just instantly. You don't have to go to the dictionary app. You don't have to do anything. And that's a very cool little one that I know is a part of Mountain Lion. So if you haven't tried that one and you're like me, sometimes I'm like, yeah, I need to know what that is.
Yeah, I think they simplified that one.
Yeah.
Can I correct you on one thing? You don't have to turn anything on because I didn't even know about it until you just said it.
Well, it may be a default.
Okay. Yeah, I think it is because it's giving me the meaning of the word added now because I just tapped on it with three fingers. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a cool feature.
Because I've so been, wow. And suddenly, what are those things? What are those, the widgets just got even more useless for me.
The dashboard widgets.
I was going to dashboard. So I've got one thing now that I go to the dashboard for. Now that we've got the dictionary there. I take it back. I'll go for the thesaurus as well. But yeah. All right. Wow, that's pretty hip.
Does the dictionary thing not give you the thesaurus if you scroll down? It's only dictionary?
I don't know. Oh, hang on. Oh, there's the, okay. That's it. Yep. All right. If they find a way to like just automatically put a currency converter on the front page, then I have no more use for dashboard. None.
Isn't that cool?
You want to know one that's really stupid, but it means a lot to me? Is, you know how when you would start scrolling, if you wanted to use the traditional sort of scroll bar thing? So in Lion, you start scrolling and it's like this tiny little thing pops up. It's, you know, about as thin as a piece of thread.
Yeah.
Mountain Lion now, when you get over to that area, it actually widens it out and makes it a reasonable width so you can actually grab the little handle of that thing.
I am a fan of that.
So
yeah.
Stupid, but
no, it's not stupid at all. Actually, I brought it up with Augustrometer recently. I was like, oh, that's so much better than it was. He's like, it's still dumb. It needs to be better than that. And I was like, can we just agree that it's better than it was though? He's like, oh yeah, it's 1,000 times better than it was. It just needs to be 5,000 times better than it was, apparently, as far as he's concerned.
Yes.
And the last one that I think might have been in Lion, but if it wasn't, start using it now because it's very cool. If you ever want to make an alias, you can go right to Finder, and if you drag and hold down Command Option at the same time, you can literally drag that alias right out of there into the desktop. And even better yet, if you are, I always use Spotlight for everything. If you go and look something up in Spotlight, and you can do the same thing, hold down Command Option, and you can drag something from Spotlight and make an alias out of it that way. And that's very cool. And if you hold down, what is it, just the Command key when you're on any file in Spotlight, it'll tell you not only the name of the file, but if you wait about a second, it'll scroll up and tell you the exact path to that in your directory.
Oh, and I'm going to tell you all those are available in Lion too. Still cool tips, though.
I thought they were, but anyways, if you hadn't tried them.
Those are some of my favorite tips as well.
Yeah, those are very cool. So there you go.
Yeah. I know one that I'm loving, and it's not really a trick. It's just something that they added in Mail. I have a lot of like IMAP folders for my mail accounts, and I like to sort and organize things. I don't do the whole, you know, keep everything in the inbox thing. And something that I've always loved about iOS is that when you need to move stuff into folders, whatever IMAP account you're in, contextually, it jumps right to sort of, or it has those folders grouped. So when you have IMAP folders, you know, and you're in a certain account, it'll just show you those. And then you can back out if you wanted to move messages to an IMAP folder in another mail account. And in Mountain Lion or in Lion, the mail app is just one giant sort of list over there on the left, and you got to kind of find it, or even if you use the contextual thing, you got to drill down to it. In Mountain Lion, they finally added those folders. So you get a little folder of all your accounts and then subfolders of your IMAP accounts. So it's much easier to file stuff off from your inbox into individual account folders. Another one of those little things that's, you know, it's not a big change, but for productivity, it makes a huge difference.
Adam, one more that I read about but I haven't tried is that I heard that now if you use mail.app, which I don't, but if you do, you can drag an email from mail.app right into Reminders, and it will put a reminder there for you. Like, again, I haven't tried that one myself, but that's what I heard it can do now, which is pretty cool.
Give that a shot. You know, I haven't... Now that Reminders is an app, I have to wonder if I'll use it a little bit more. I have other things that I use for, like, to-do lists, but... So I guess that's another follow-up question to this. I mean, do you guys like the fact that they've now moved notes and reminders and all these things into their sort of own little applications? And one, have you been using those apps at all? So maybe it doesn't make a difference. And if you do use that apps, if you do use those apps, do you think that's a good change?
I totally forgot they were there. That's
so
kind
you
of
don't
terrible,
use them.
But I totally forgot. No, I don't. One of the guys that I was hanging out with in Vegas was complaining about reminders. He wants them to be more customizable. He would rather be able to change them a bit more than he feels he can. The only problem is I can't say exactly what he was saying. I mean, there may be a way to do it. The only problem is I use it so little. I mean, I use it on my phone quite a bit, but I don't use it on the Mac.
Well, so it might become more powerful for you on the Mac. I don't know if you use it on the phone with Siri, but I mean, you can do cool things with Siri. Like if you make a list called, you know, like a reminder list called groceries, then you can tell Siri to like add stuff to your grocery list.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And she'll just go do it. So, you know, you're driving in the car and you think about something, you can, you know, safely add something to your reminder list.
The only problem is, I mean, that's one of the difficulties, right? One of the things I really like about Mountain Lion is I really haven't had to change much of anything about what I do. I guess there are ways that I could change what I do, but there's not much that I've had to change. So it's sort of like what you were talking about Dropbox earlier. I've already got a grocery. I use something called Grocery IQ. And the reason I use it is because my fiance and I can both use it and it syncs across our phones. So
yep.
I was in Vegas and all of a sudden like 9 things appear on my shopping list. And I wasn't doing it. And it's because she was doing it. And like, you know, if she goes to one part of the grocery store and I go to the other part of the grocery store to pick some stuff up, right? Like I will see stuff disappear from the list as I'm walking around the store. So it's pretty powerful. So, I mean, looking for ways that I can use, you know, what they've got to do what I'm already doing. It's sort of like the whole thing you were talking again with iCloud and Dropbox. You do what you do. And so it's neat that they've added reminders, and that will be great again once we're all living in the Apple ecosystem, once we're all living in iCloud. But man, making me go. And, you know, I'm an Apple fan. I'm not sure if you heard this about me. making me actually make that move is, I don't know how they're going to do that exactly.
Yeah, I agree. And it's hard. It's not just easy here. We go blind because we're not that way.
I think they're doing it with the new. They're going to do it with the new users and new customers, right? Mm-hmm. We're in that weird phase where we're the old, like you said earlier, we're the old guys, and we're just going to slowly go away, and everybody else is going to be used to this ecosystem. I mean, it's a natural progression, and that's the right way to handle it, right? And that's why we still have, you know, other methods of doing these things, and slowly those will die off too. So I was afraid you were going to say, you know, it would happen when we went to the back to the Earth. You know.
Oh yeah, absolutely. No, I've had that discussion with some people before. I think it was with Tim Beharin one time. We were talking about what the problem is with adoption of the cloud, and he said, you know, people are used to the way they do it, and we all grew up, you know, knowing where our disks were. And, you know, knowing where our audio was stored. And so finally, after him talking about, you know, the transition it's going to take, it's going to be a generational thing. I was like, so basically, we just have to die. And he said, yeah, kind of.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, not to bring Star Trek back into it, but if you look at that future, right, everybody's stuff is just where, right? You just kind of call it up when you need it. And it's all commingled, I'm assuming. I've always assumed it was just in one giant, you know, computer system. And the computer probably has no file structure for it. It's just a bunch of stuff.
Right. But I don't like Kirk sits there and says Captain's Log, and so does Picard. And or go to, you know, Battlestar Galactica was actually, or no, not Battlestar Galactica, Caprica. Caprica was actually, for people who saw it, was a bit more, I felt like we could get to Caprica relatively soon. We might not have a robot, like, you know, running around as soon as some of the people there had them, like personal robots. Mm-hmm. But as far as like no file system and just walking to my house and calling out what I want and there it is, you know, yeah, I think we're fairly close to that kind of thing. And the people who are going to suffer are going to be, you know, me who insists on using a separate grocery app from what's, you know, built into the whole iOS ecosystem, unless they build an API for it, which really seems like the more sensible thing. I mean, Apple doesn't need me to set up a reminder list that is groceries.
Right.
They just need to, like, you know, make Grocery IQ and the rest of iOS and the Mac OS hold hands.
Yeah, because I guess in that world, too, you really don't have quote-unquote apps, right?
Right.
You just, like, right. tell it the thing that you want, and it gives yeah. you whatever interface you need to have to interact with that thing.
See, but when I just start getting comfortable right. with dipping my toe in the water into that whole ecosystem and stuff, then something like the Matt Honan incident happens. And then I go right back into caveman stuff. You know, it's like, where are my three versions of everything? You know, where's the backup to the backup? Let's go to my file vault in the bank and make sure I have a hard drive there. I go right there, even just when I'm starting to go, okay, I get this. I'm feeling it. It's really cool. And then something like that happens. And as unfortunate as it is, I shouldn't want to lose my baby's pictures, you know.
Yeah.
So it becomes it's a slippery slope, and I think we I don't know. I think being an old guy for me definitely has an impact on that. I'll
yeah.
admit it.
Well, that comes down to a basic human trust issue more than a technology issue, right? Because mm-hmm. the failure and breakdown, I talked about this on a couple of my episodes. The failure and breakdown there was all in policy and yep. human beings. It was enabled by technology, but you know, it was still all the mistakes were they shouldn't have had certain policies in place for doing password resets and, you know, basing information on certain subsets of stuff that's readily available. But those were all policy things that fell
yeah.
apart.
Yeah, but to what Victor's saying, I mean, if he had an external hard drive that he was backing up to and then unplugging from,
right,
you know, for all of his stuff. I mean, like a lot of what got wiped was from a solid state MacBook Air.
Yep.
And if right. and if that had even just had like a My Book that he was backing it all up to,
yeah.
Then they could have wiped his computer, and maybe there would have been a way to recover it from the My Book. I mean, the fact that it was all living in the cloud made it possible for somebody besides him to erase. So, I mean, that's sort of that old man thing of like, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and print this out and leave it over here, too.
I mean, it's yeah. the perfect storm thing. So, it's, you know, it's probably not the best example, but it is still the fact that, you know, consumers, whether we're more advanced users or not, you know, when we're talking to our parents or people who just got the Mac, you know, there still has to be this level of education to know, hey, if I have a desktop, I probably don't need to turn, you know, find my Mac on that particular machine, you know, and some of the stuff, you know, yeah, I mean, right. really, let's, I mean, and it is, it's there. You
well,
know? And,
although $60,000 worth of stuff got stolen from Steve Jobs' widow's house last night.
Yep.
There you
I mean,
go.
You know, computers yeah. and other stuff. So, I mean, you're right. There's probably no reason. There's almost definitely no reason to turn Find My Mac onto a desktop until the first time somebody breaks into your house and takes your crud.
Right.
And then that's when you still have to go back to basics. So I think as we talk to people and they're getting so used to this ecosystem, whether it's from Apple or anybody else, that it's almost this mindless computer stuff. And then we end up being, you know, that guy who helps everybody in our family with their computer stuff. And we hate to have to be the bearers of bad news and say, guess what? You're screwed. You know, I mean, you have to still follow certain things. I spent the last week, you know, redoing a bunch of passwords for my wife and for myself just because they hadn't been done in a while, and just making them as random just because it was like yet another wake-up call, you know, and nothing against Matt. That could have been me just as easily. It's just one of those things.
Could have been any of us, really.
It could have been anybody. And it's just like, if you haven't done that stuff because you're getting so comfortable in your ease of technology, you know, you still got to do certain things or facilitate those around you so that they do just a couple of things that may save a lot of grief, you know?
Yeah. The one thing that came out of that I'm for sure going to do is set up a separate email address for my password resets, you know, that's not tied to anything other yep. than a password reset email, and go through and change those as my backup, you know, change my backup email. Cause you know, that was a big hole there. Well, I don't want to harp on that too
right,
much. Cause
right,
I think
right.
that's been covered a lot over the past week and a half. Let's get to some of the stuff that we think is going to be coming up, or the community at large rather thinks is going to be coming up. iPhone 5. And I don't know if there's a whole lot to say there, but I mean, what do you guys, I haven't gotten your guys' take on it. I know I've talked about it, and we've probably all talked about it separately, different places, but what's your guys' take on the iPhone 5? Are you excited about it? It's, you know, just another iPhone. How are we feeling at this point?
It's not going to be called iPhone 5.
Yeah, I just say that to give it a moniker, and I'm totally with you on that. Yeah, it's going to be called the new iPhone, right?
iPhone.
Yeah.
Probably so. Yeah, probably so. Or iPhone Long. Or Long John iPhone. No, I don't know.
I like that.
I have
that.
No idea what I'm going to be that. Called, but it's Long John iPhone. That could be the name of my next iPhone.
LJP.
Who knows, depending on if it is, in fact, a longer, skinnier
longer
phone.
John.
I'm kind of excited, but I mean, it's time for my 2-year upgrade. So that could be why. This is going to sound so weird. Unless it's radically different, I may stick with my iPhone 4. And I know that's going to lock me out of Siri for a while, but you know, and maybe it's my situation is very different because I'm mostly working from home because, I've got an iPad and because I've got the MacBook Pro. Do I really need to lock myself into another 2-year contract? Is kind of where I am at this point.
You know, and I said this on my show, someone talked me into doing, just buying unlocked. I might purely spend the money and buy the thing completely unlocked and then use, Straight Talk as my carrier, which is a pay-as-you-go service. They actually sell SIMs for the current iPhones now, and you just $15, you buy the SIM, you pop it in, and it's $45 a month, unlimited everything, and they are a mobile virtual network operator, MVNO, for AT&T. So it's AT&T's 3G network. The two things you do lose, I think, is you lose visual voicemail, and I think it will not do, or I had a hard time getting it to work, MMS, the picture messaging.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
SMS is fine, but I think you can get it to work. Yeah. I think the problem was I was dealing with it on a previously locked and then unlocked AT&T phone. Apparently, when you get a purely unlocked device, it behaves a little bit different. You can actually get in on the phone and set what's called the profile settings directly on the phone. And in my case, I didn't have access to that menu because it was a previously locked device. And even though it was officially unlocked from AT&T, the software still didn't enable that. So I had to kind of go through some of the Apple tools, and it didn't have all of the options for putting in sort of the server settings that you needed to do. So I'm hoping that would be changed, but I don't use those two features enough. And when you do the math over the 2 years, you're saving like $1,000. I mean, it's like crazy how much money I would save, even though I'm going to have to pay a lot more upfront. You know, it's an $800, $900 outlay at the beginning, but long-term you're better off. And I won't have, and if I want to switch carriers, you know, I'll switch. Now, here's the interesting thing is it going to be one phone for, since everybody's moving to 4G LTE, mm-hmm. is it going to be one phone for whatever carrier, or is it still going to be two? I think it's still going to have to be two because of backwards compatibility, right?
I'm not 100% certain what you're asking, honestly.
Well, you because, know, we I mean, have the wait, Verizon how, and well, the how, AT&T iPhones now, and you've got to pick, right? You've got to say, I want the AT&T right. one, I want the Verizon one. Well, 4G LTE is all the same technology. We don't have the reason we have two phones now is because you've got CDMA versus GSM 3G networks.
Right. Okay, but it can't actually be a truly world phone unless they're going to go with the, was it the Gobi chip from Qualcomm? I mean, isn't that the issue of why they got sued in Australia and in Italy for calling the
iPad they didn't have the right
cellular iPad 4G?
Yeah, they didn't have the right frequencies. It didn't support right. all of them. Yeah.
So, I mean, they're still going to be making more than one phone. Am I wrong about that? I mean, there's going to be like a U.S. or a North America version and an international version, maybe?
I don't know. It's all so confusing.
I live for the day when it's just like
the iPhone and you just buy it and use it wherever you want to use it.
I mean, I think really the build out of 4G LTE is going to be the killer feature of the next iPhone. I mean, that is going to be what makes it an incredibly selling device. As these networks are getting built out, they're, you know, they're getting ready to be able to handle that traffic, and that's going to be the bottom line. A lot of that is dependent on that Qualcomm chip, which is out, supposed to be out like right around this time of the year. So I think that's the killer feature. The bigger screen, if it has it, yes, that'll be nice. 16:9 ratio, it'll be nice. But I really think 4G LTE is the killer evolution of the next phone.
Yeah, yeah. I just hope it doesn't have that stupid two-tone back. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It's funny. I'm sorry. I don't. You see, I think what it looks like is actually going to be a bigger selling point. And I know this may sound stupid, and you're, you know, I mean, here we are, three geeks talking to other geeks. But I think for the general consumer, 4G is not the big selling point. If 4G was the big selling point, then the iPhone would not be the number one selling smartphone on Verizon, AT&T, and Sprint.
Right.
I think people will be happy to have 4G. I think they will like 4G, although if AT&T, Verizon, and Sprint, well, Sprint's not going to. If AT&T right. and Verizon try to up the rates considerably, then I don't think people are going to be quite as happy. If people have to choose between 3G and 4G, even though they have a phone that's capable of the two, if the plans become stupid, where you know you have to decide, okay, well now how much do you want to pay and how fast do you want to go, and are you okay paying more? I mean, is it going to be reverse compatible to the point where I can say, well, I don't want your stupid 4G because I'm going to watch two movies and then owe you $50? I mean,
right. Yeah, right.
I don't feel like 4G is going to be the grand selling point. I think if you read Wired, they'll tell you it is. And if you read Computer World, they'll tell you it is. And if you read, well, certainly if you read Android Central, they'll tell you it is. But if you, I think if you ask the average, I mean, people are still right now walking into AT&T stores and buying iPhones. And yeah. They will probably even this quarter be the top selling smartphone at Verizon, AT&T, and mm-hmm. Sprint. With mm-hmm. everybody saying sales suck right now because everybody knows there's a new iPhone coming out. Well, not everybody. But the people who are going in to buy right now know that they want an iPhone largely. And they don't, I mean, it has not yet occurred to them that 4G is something that they are ever going to care about.
Right. I mean, and that's a good point, too. I mean, in you know, asking about buying the new one, you know, if I wasn't doing this podcast,
yeah,
I think, you know, like you're saying, Ken, I don't know that I necessarily need or would want a new iPhone. I don't think there's going to be enough new in it to be that different of a device. I mean, they could blow us away with some, you know, feature we haven't heard rumored yet, but
right.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really think of anything that's going they're going to add. It certainly isn't NFC, and I don't even think that's going to be in there.
Right, right. Right.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of there. I guess it depends. And I've said this before, every time a new iPhone comes out, I don't feel like I have to have it for my show. Every time a new Mac comes out, I don't feel like I have to have it for my show. When the iPad came out, I felt like, okay, well, I have to have an iPad because while I can understand theoretically what an iPad is, I don't, you know, I don't think I can actually talk about it. I don't think I can really, you know, explain to people or say to people or even have a full understanding of what I'm doing if I don't have one, if I haven't used one quite a bit. iPad 2 and iPad 3, not so much. I did end up with an iPad 2 for, you know, through a set of happy circumstances where basically a listener was kind enough to buy me an iPad 2, which was very nice. And then I was able to give my first iPad to my fiance and move on. But neither one of us have the Retina display iPad. And we probably won't until one of our iPads breaks down because, you know.
Or I mean, you leave it on top of your car. And try it on.
Yeah, sure. Or, you know, take it in the ocean or skip it across a lake, whatever you do. I mean, unless they add something so incredibly wild, like I know the iPad is going to have Siri with iOS 6. Neither of our iPads will, you know, be able to, the iPad with Retina display rather will. And so neither of ours. Of course, we may all be getting the iPad mini at that point.
Or the iPad not so mini. Yeah, that's what I want to talk about next. So thanks for the transition. 9to5 today was coming out and saying, or was iMore came out and said one of those places, I can't remember, I'm going to get my sources mixed up, but that I think it was 9to5 had a mock-up, and supposedly it's not that much smaller than the current one now, all of a sudden, you know, how these rumors go, right? But I, you know, the biggest thing about this, the iPad mini rumor to me, is if they hit the price point that everybody is talking about.
Yep.
Yeah, it's more about the price point than I think even the features. I think just the fact that it's got an iPad label on it,
yeah,
people are going to want it.
Well, what price point are you thinking though? 300?
No, I'm thinking 250, 249. But even at 300, I don't know that would be a deal breaker again because it's an iPad.
I agree.
Yeah, I got to go with Ken. 300 is the price.
I mean, I could see it being 249, and that's really if they want to do
obliterate every other.
Yeah, assault the earth kind of approach. I mean, just make it possible for anybody to live or thrive in that space besides Apple. That's how but man alive, that would really hurt their profit margin.
So do we all believe in this device? Do we all believe this is something that Apple is bringing out at this point? Is it inevitable?
It's kind of hard to see how you don't believe at this point, but I don't know. Yeah, probably.
And that's, I mean, my gut is, you know, it's been, this rumor has been so strong at this point that I think there's no way it's not happening. You know, I used to push it off and say, well, it's just something Apple is playing with. And I think a lot of it is timing. I don't remember if I said it on this show or where I said it, but I think a lot of it has to do with, I think they've sold iPads to all the early adopters. It's becoming a mainstream product now. And now they are finally seeing some threats from these smaller, cheaper devices. And I think just like they did with the iPod, you know, it's the same sort of thing. They only had the big, expensive iPod for a long, long time, and they really didn't diversify the line until it became mature, and then they started to see competitors start to bring out, you know, viable products in another area that suddenly became alternatives for people. So I do think there's a certain percentage of the population now that goes in and says, okay, $500 for an iPad, which is the thing I really want, but, well, the Kindle does almost as much or does pretty much everything that I want and has Angry Birds and it's cheaper, so I'm going to go ahead and settle and get this. And I think that happens to a lot of buyers. And so I think by bringing out something in that price range, even if it's $50 or $100 more, the person's going to be able to justify and say, oh, yeah, I can get the iPad because that's what I really want.
Yeah, they have an Apple product. I think that's what's going to sell it. I'm ambivalent about it, really, as far as the size and everything. The form factor doesn't entice me at all. But I think, like you said, it's just the right thing at the right time, and people want an Apple product, and they're going to be able to get into it cheaper than they can for what they really want. Like you said,
hold the phone. Are you saying you're not going to get one, Victor? Really?
I'm not.
Really?
Absolutely not.
Dude.
Absolutely.
All right.
On record.
Market.
I will bet you $5. I will bet you $5. If it's $250, I'll bet you get one. If it's $300, maybe you don't. If it's $250, I'll bet you do. Really?
You going to take that bet here on the MacCast? All right. You heard it here.
Yep. I'll take it. Nope.
All right.
Watch your Twitter stream after the announcement in September.
If it was the iPhone 5 thing, that would be a different thing. I'm not going to take that bet because I might get one of those, but not. Nah.
All right. We'll see.
I'm saving my dollars for the television.
Wow. You know, Tim Baharin says you're going to have those dollars for a very long time.
Did you
read his piece the other day?
I didn't, but...
It's a great piece, but I'll be honest with you. The reason I think it's a great piece is because he's making the arguments that I was making well over a year ago. And the problem is as I'm reading his piece, I'm like, that's what I think. And then I realize, no, that's what I thought, because I finally bought into all the talk. And then for Tim Baharin, president of Creative Strategies, to come out and say, yeah, you know, Apple doesn't really need to do a TV. They can actually concentrate on this little box, and because people don't buy TVs as often, and, you know, da 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 da. I love Gene Munster's study the other day about the Apple TV. Did you guys see that?
It was like, back up, because I like what you're saying. I've been saying the same thing too.
Yeah,
that Apple was never going to do a full television, and, you know, I always had the wild hair that if they ever did anything beyond a set-top box, it would be, you know, OEMing an Apple TV innard that TV manufacturers could put in. But I didn't even believe that. I just believed it was going to be they were going to stick with a box that would plug into any TV. I mean, now that every TV has HDMI, there's no reason not to go that route. So sorry.
Yeah. No, I don't. And the thing, what bothers me is I succumbed, I think. I was beaten down by the waves, and I finally accepted as inevitable that Apple was going to make a full-on television. And so to hear Tim say, and in fairness, he says they could, I mean, he's not saying they don't, that they're never going to, but for all of the reasons that I always said about, you know, having to fill the shelves at Best Buy and then have them just sit there when people take 5 to 7 years. I mean, the Munster thing was something like 50% of the people that he talked to wanted to buy an Apple TV. They showed an interest in buying an Apple TV. And then 29% of the people that he talked to said, you know, it's not even time for me to buy a TV. I'm not in the market, but if Apple came out with a TV, I would totally buy a TV. And then Munster said, well, okay, now, so here's the thing. It's 42 inches. It's $1,500. And I'm sorry, where are you going? Hey, come back, because we're not done talking, are we? And it turns out we were at that point, because what people said that they would cap out at for the Apple television with all the cool stuff and, you know, with him like totally like praising and just saying absolutely, $549.
Yep. That sounds about right.
They're willing to spend on Apple TV. And Munster is still cool with it, because I think what he ended up with was 12% of people. 12% of people said they would go ahead and buy the 42-inch TV at $1,500. And he's like, hey, that's a lot. Even if it was only 10%, that still adds about, I can't remember how much he said, but basically he boiled it down. And it would still end up being a winner for Apple, even if they only got, I think, 10% of the market. So
The weirdest thing is the TV market is so fickle right now anyways, you know. I mean, even just the regular market. So, I mean, I really was just kidding when I started this part of the conversation. But it is really finicky right now. The whole 3D thing, you know, have come and gone. And, I mean, it's a really weird time for TV. And so for them to get in at this time, it would have to be so revolutionary that it would be just something we had never thought of. So.
And then you've still got to convince people that they need to spend money that they don't need to spend because their TV was fine yesterday.
On a major appliance, yep.
Right, exactly. Yep. And if you can bring all of that, if you can bring all that to the $99 box and start charging money, like they were able to get Hulu Plus. I don't really care about Hulu Plus, but they were able to get Hulu Plus. And that was like, for whatever reason, they were never able to get together on that before. And I think I read somewhere that the reason that it actually happened was because of airplane mirroring. What's it called in the Mac?
That's the rumor.
That's it.
So because people were able to now watch Hulu, then Hulu is willing to go ahead and take the give Apple its 30% cut, because at least it will now get money because it's right there on the screen. So if they can keep doing that,
Apple TV is still the best $100 you can spend on anything. I think it's just a great.
More. They need to bring more of those apps, though. I mean, it'll be better with all that stuff. So if they keep bringing out those apps, like the PBS app on the iPad rocks.
Yeah,
I want that on my Apple TV.
Yeah, let's go ahead and get Crackle on there too. Why don't we?
Yeah,
I want the Curiosity Cam.
Amazon now. I mean, I was so happy when Amazon came out with their app, because I'm an Amazon Prime customer. So I'm now watching a bunch of movies that I would never watch on Amazon on my computer, because I just don't like sitting in front of my computer to watch stuff. But I'll sit in front of my iPad. And even better yet, if it was on my Apple TV.
That's what I wanted. I wanted the Apple TV big time.
Yeah. But I guess now technically I could AirPlay mirror it. So. Once again, I can get it on my Apple TV if I really wanted to.
Which you would think would actually get Amazon on there fairly soon.
Yeah, you would hope. You would hope. So,
except there's no 30%. That's the problem. There's no 30% in it for Apple with Amazon Prime. Yeah. Because they're not even letting you sign up for anything through the Amazon Video On Demand or buy anything through the Amazon Video On Demand app for the iPad. So, I mean, assuming that they're actually going to be able to do something with Apple TV, that's going to be a decent amount of real estate. You're going to end up with the kind of thing that you ended up with in iTunes or in the App Store, where people who at first were reticent because they didn't want to, cut Apple in for its 30%, or they didn't want to be seen as seeming to, give way too much power to Apple. If the Apple TV actually goes well, if they're able to get just even just two good content, like really just two wonderful content partners for which Apple may even have to pay more than Apple would normally want to pay, suddenly, it's Boardwalk and Park Place and you want to build a hotel there, right? I mean, you'll get people willing to give up the 30% who yesterday wouldn't even take Apple's phone call because they thought they were going to be screwed by it. But then as soon as a couple of big plays go there, then it's over. Just like it was for the music industry.
Yeah.
Or so says the music industry. And, just like it has been for other content providers in Apple.
I'll tell you what I'm willing to pay for in a minute would be if they would start doing first-run movies much sooner, you know, on that kind of a device. I would absolutely pay a premium for that. You know, I hate having to wait, you know, the long wait to see that movie that I want to rent on Apple TV or whatever.
The
I
rental would much delay prefer. Is yeah, annoying I hate that the studios have. It's ridiculous.
I'll happily pay $7 to see a movie, you know, within a short amount of time after its premiere run.
Yeah, but they're still worried about killing their DVD sales.
I know.
Which is a stupid thing because, as I've always argued, I'm either going to buy the DVD if I want the DVD or I'm going to rent it. If I'm renting it, I'm not buying the DVD, which is why I'm renting it. Otherwise, I would just buy the DVD. So, you know what I'm saying? And if I like the movie enough when I rent it, there's a better chance that I'm going to go buy the DVD after that, after the fact.
Yeah.
What would be really awesome is if they would let me rent it. And then if I really enjoyed it, let me take my rental price or part of my rental price off of my iTunes purchase of the full movie.
There you go.
You want to rent to own the Avengers.
Yes.
Rent to own. Yes.
Okay. Yes. I bet no, there's a lot of people. There are many movies that I would have done that in a heartbeat.
Sure. It's not a bad idea. It's like the whole Complete My Album thing that they did, has worked for me a time or two. It hasn't worked for me, I don't think, as much as the music companies had hoped it would, but it's worked a time or two.
I don't know.
I'll tell you what, the competition is what's going to make it happen. And I remember the three of us talking about when Amazon first started coming on with the MP3 store, you know, and I don't know, Amazon gets most of my money for music these days, not Apple. So
really, Spotify gets almost all of my music at this point. I'm still exactly where I've been for the past 5 years as far as subscription services go.
Right.
Want. That's it. As soon as Apple does one, then Apple gets all of my money for music.
Yep.
Huh. So,
yeah.
You guys want to talk hardware a little bit, or should we move on? I could sit here and talk to you guys all day. So, and I'm sure the audience would love it too, because they enjoy these episodes as well. But in the interest of everybody's time.
Yeah, I hate to be the one to do that. But I mean, if we want to get back together on something else, first of all, yes, it's always a pleasure. So, you know, but I'm going to have to cut out pretty soon. I apologize.
All right. Well, no, let's get on to the last thing. Did you guys, I had thrown in there just some of your favorite stuff. Could be an app, an accessory, cool stuff. Did you have a chance to browse through something? Do either of you have something?
I've got, well, two things. There's this little Star Trek podcast. Okay.
Yeah, do that.
I did
at the beginning of the show. No, I've actually got something else. Okay. Mission log. A Roddenberry Star Trek podcast. Please, if you only check out one new podcast this week, check that out because I would love to see what you think. And all the video on demand stuff that we were talking about, all of the Star Trek episodes are available on Netflix and on Amazon Video on Demand. And of course, they're also available by DVD and Blu-ray at this point. So what we're actually hoping people will do is watch along with us, because this is not like we're not going to sit there and say, you know, wasn't Kirk stupid in this episode? Although we do that occasionally. I mean, we'll talk about something like, well, that was kind of a weird thing that this character did. But it really is trying to figure out, I mean, what Rod wanted to do in doing this show was to make sure that people actually look at the messages and the meanings and the philosophy and look at it critically. That it not just pass into, that was really cool 50 years ago, or that was really cool 30 years ago. That it not just be nostalgia, but to his way of thinking, there's a lot that's happening in that series that started 46 years ago at this point that is still relevant today. And so that's the job that he's given me and John, is to try to sit there and figure out if it's there. So please watch along with us, and you know, we'll talk over the next 13 and a half years.
Can I pile on that one little thing too? If you haven't seen Rod's documentary, which is now on iTunes, Trek Nation, you should check that out too, because that goes to a lot of, I think, the heart of what, you know, there's a lot of those themes in there talking about.
I was going to say it goes hand in hand with what Ken just said about what that show is going to be about. And I think if you look at the documentary first and then follow the show, you're going to get where Rod's coming
where
from.
Where Rod's coming from, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sorry. Yeah. Just had to throw that in there.
I appreciate it. I read I can't remember the name of the article now or the name of the website, but I read an interview that he did about the mission log, and they said, so do you feel like this is actually almost a continuation of Trek Nation? Which is his documentary. And he said, you know, in a lot of ways I do. And that kind of freaked me out and I had to stop reading.
Know your dedication. You're going to do a great job with it.
Oh, of course.
the iOS thing that I have, and it's only because I like stuff, you know, in universe, as people say. There's a movie coming out in November. It's a Disney movie. It looks like a Pixar movie called Wreck-It Ralph.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. And it was advertised all over the Olympics, and it looks like a really funny movie to me about a bad guy in a video game who doesn't want to be a bad guy anymore, and so he starts hopping from one video game to another. Well, the game that he's actually a member of is apparently something called Fix-It Felix Jr., and I only know that that's what it's called because it is now in the App Store. It's free, and it's like it reminds me a bit of Rampage.
Totally.
It's like an 8-bit video game. It's like Donkey Kong or something like that. And you're actually not playing Wreck-It Ralph in this because nobody plays Wreck-It Ralph. Wreck-It Ralph is the bad guy in the game. You're Felix, and you go and you try to fix the windows that Ralph is breaking, and he's throwing bricks at you, and ducks are flying through. And it's just it's a game of only like a minute or two to play. Anything that puts me more in the movie, I'm always a fan of. So the fact that I can now play this game that this character is going to run away from, you know, come November. And if they're really clever, I hope when I turn it on in November, whatever, when they say there's an update, I hope Wreck-It Ralph is actually no longer in Fix-It Felix. That would be nuts if that's the case. But it's put out by Disney. It's free. It's obviously to promote Wreck-It Ralph. But don't search for Wreck-It Ralph because that's not it. It's Fix-It Felix is the name of the game. So that's fun.
Cool.
Even if it's not that great a game, because I've seriously played like 1 minute. I can't tell you if it's a good game or not. It was just neat to see it there.
I like that kind of stuff too. Yeah, and you're right. If they are smart, he'll be missing when the movie comes out.
Yep. I got one, Adam, that I just picked up, an Apple Thunderbolt to FireWire 800 converter. $30 purchase, and really great if you have like a MacBook Air, you know, that of course doesn't have FireWire 800. Just plug that guy into the Thunderbolt port, and you've got an instant bus. The better thing, though, is like if you use it with your iMac, if you have an iMac that has Thunderbolt, then you can use it as a second FireWire bus, which is really important, like for the audio device that I have that requires and works best when it has its own Thunderbolt dedicated bus. This is a way that you can add an extra FireWire bus into your system for $30.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it is. It is really a cool. I'm really glad they're doing that. I hope that they do a USB 3 one. That would be rocking too.
I'm gonna yeah. I have a feeling they're gonna come out with all kinds of adapters.
Which I can't wait. The only thing about this thing is that it does have to be the last device on your chain because obviously it doesn't have a pass through. So that's right. But other than that, it's just a great thing. And then of course you can use your FireWire 400 adapters and make it work with that too.
Cool. I'm going to give you guys two that'll bring out the inner 13-year-old in all of you. The first one is, and I had avoided this and avoided it, and then my nephew came for a visit, and I think he's 9 or 10, and he was totally into Minecraft. Have you guys played Minecraft?
Mm-hmm.
You have? I had avoided it, and they have a pocket edition. So it's not like the full Minecraft that you get online or whatever, and I know there's some differences, but for me, it's just enough of a flavor and taste. Minecraft pocket edition for the iPhone and the iPad. Wow. And it's a blast. I mean, basically, it's one of these games. It's, again, like kind of 8-bitty kind of graphics, and you run around and you have to mine materials, and then you can create tools and all sorts of things. You build furnaces and houses, and you can create, basically build up and create your world. It reminds me a little bit of, I guess not so much a little bit like Second Life, but, you know, like all these sort of sim kind of games. But But it's got its own spin on it, and it looks cool. It's all, you know, sort of cube based. This probably a lot of people already know all this stuff, but I've just discovered it, and I knew it was something I was going to like and like a lot, and so that's a lot of fun. And then the other one that I discovered when I was out at Nerdtacular and had just come out was Magic 2013. Do either of you guys ever play Magic?
No,
the trading card game.
No. No, yeah, I think I so played I got, like twice maybe.
I got sucked into that early on in the early days, and then, you know, I stopped and I haven't played for years and years and years. And I knew the game was coming out for the iPad and I was interested in it, but I was worried that, you know, just too much is going to have changed. And I think there's actually one of the complaints among people in the Magic community is that the game itself sort of has these campaigns and sort of leads you through how to play the game in certain ways. And so for me, it was great because I could pick it back up because I knew the basic ideas and concepts. But then it really, as you're playing the game, sort of teaches you and brought me back into, you know, all the different cards and stuff like that. So that was a lot of fun. So those two things are my picks, Magic 2013 and Minecraft Pocket Edition.
I do have one more thing, and I can't recommend it yet because I haven't played it yet, but I did pick it up when I was at the Star Trek convention. It's a card game. You just reminded me of it because you were talking about Magic. It's a card game called Red Shirts. Now, the idea is you're the captain of a starship, and you've got a ship full of red shirts, people in red shirts. Not legally affiliated with Star Trek, by the way, so don't get any ideas, because legally, they have nothing to do with each other. But you're the captain of a ship full of red shirts, and you have to go and perform missions. But the goal is to divest yourself of all of your red shirts. So like if you come to a diplomatic mission and you've got a red shirt who has diplomatic ability, you don't want to throw down that guy because he'll obviously succeed. So you send down a science officer who has no diplomatic ability whatsoever. And then the other player can throw like a universal translator on him. And so suddenly that gives him diplomatic ability. And so then you have to throw other things on to like screw up the universal translator. And the whole idea is basically to kill all your red shirts. And I'm a huge fan of this. I actually bought it. I felt kind of bad. It was a friend's birthday yesterday and I met him and he and I both play games occasionally, you know, sometimes board games, sometimes card games. And I was like, I know this is supposed to be a birthday present for you, but I think honestly, it's a birthday present for us. And so I'll play it and I'll report back. I mean, it's cute. It's got a wicked sense of humor. And, I got walked through the mechanics by the guy who developed it. And if it's good, I would imagine I will be talking about it next time just as much as I did now.
Cool. Are you a board game fan? I'm a huge board game fan, board game geek.
I'm a board game fan and I'm a card game fan. I never played a lot of the card games. Like I never played Magic. I played Illuminati back when Illuminati was a trading card game.
Yep.
And yeah, board games. I mean, I like sort of the weird ones. Like I like Supremacy. I like Settlers of Catan.
Yep.
I can be talked into Monopoly, but I tend to like things that are a little bit left of center of that. Of course, it's always fun to lose at Risk.
Right. Well, the reason I'm bringing it up is, have you caught Will Wheaton's new tabletop on YouTube?
I have heard about it. I have not seen it yet.
It's awesome. It is. If you're into those obscure geeky games, it's great. Like, do you ever play Munchkin? Because when you were describing Red Shirts, it sounded a little bit like Munchkin.
I have played Munchkin, yes. Yeah. I only played Munchkin one time, but I mean, it was 6 hours, so it feels like I played it for a day and a half. We had a lot of people. We had many stacked up, and yeah.
All right, so we've gone way off tangent. But if you like board games, and I'm sure there's lots of people in our community who do like board games and card games and stuff like that, yeah, another pick. Check out the show and check out Red Shirts. And thank you guys so much for coming on and hanging out. I love it when we get together and do this. And so I appreciate you taking the time out of your evening schedules to come on and chat with us. So,
dude, thank you. It is
always a blast, man. Thanks for letting me be on mic.
All right. And you guys want to, we'll go around. Victor, what are you up to these days? Where can people check out? You're
find
still
me
doing
on
the
Twitter.
Photography thing, right?
Yeah, I'm still doing the photography thing. I haven't done a podcast in a while because I'm doing the photography thing. So I'm actually out there taking pictures. But you can find me on Twitter, VICTORCAJIAO. And, you know, get a hold of me. And
Where do you put up your pictures these days? Like, where's the best place to go to check out the stuff you're shooting?
Actually, flickr.com/typical PC user, because I've had my Flickr account for so long. So that's where I have most of my pictures. I usually put them up on Twitter. But if you see me online, grab me and we'll talk.
Yeah, Victor took some great shots of, we had dinner the other night with Dave Sparks, or other week with Dave Sparks, and you took some very nice pictures of us up there. So think those are up there if people want to check them out.
Always fun.
So, and Ken?
Really, this week, it's all about Star Trek stuff. So, missionlogpodcast.com. Missionlogpodcast.com is sort of the link to everything that's that. There's a link to the Twitter feed there. There's a link to the Facebook page there. There's a link to subscribe through iTunes there. There's all kinds of stuff there. So that would be the thing I would love for people to check out right now. And then I'll go back to pushing macOS, whatever that's called.
Cool. Thanks so much, guys. So there you go. The Three Amigos, my friends Ken Ray and Victor Cajiao. Really great guys, and you should definitely check out Ken's new project that he's doing with Roddenberry Entertainment. Quick story, those of you who have been listening to the MacCast for a long time probably know or recognize that Rod was somebody I interviewed at the original iPhone launch at the Apple Store. I actually met and sort of became friends with him just because of us being both Apple fans and Apple nerds, and I didn't know who he was. I was just doing random line interviews and walked up to this guy, and he turned out to be just a really great guy. He's doing great projects in the tech community, and you should definitely check out what he's up to over at roddenberry.com. Also, be sure to check out the new podcast, Mission Log, that Ken is doing. I found out later that that podcast is actually being released on the Nerdist Network, which is a great podcast network too. So big props to Ken and Rod for making all of that happen. And I look forward to listening for, I guess, years and years to come. They've got lots of content to cover, sounds like. So that should be very cool. That's going to be it for now. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank all of my show sponsors, Circus Ponies, makers of Notebook. Be sure to watch their website for that upcoming project. You can get more information and details over at circusponies.com. Smile Software, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disc Label, PDF Pen for iPad, and Text Expander Touch. You can check out all their great software, get free trials of their Mac stuff over at smilesoftware.com. And Gazelle, if you want to get cash for that old iPhone, that old iPod, maybe an old Mac, you can do it quickly and easily. Just do a search over on gazelle.com to get your offer. And a big thank you to all of my sponsors for their support of the MacCast. Big thank you to you for your support. I do have one little housekeeping thing to do. If you listened to my July 24th episode, you know at the end of that episode I was complaining a little bit. I'm having some issues, or rather, Apple seems to be having some troubles with their podcast app and the iTunes Store app with downloading this podcast, and particularly this podcast, because I do an enhanced AAC version. That's where you get the chapter markers and you get the album art and you occasionally get some hyperlinks and things like that. That seems to be giving their app some troubles, and I'm not really sure what's going on. It seems to be intermittent. It's not every user that's being impacted. I can't actually replicate the problem on my iPhone running iOS 5.1.1. Is that the latest version? Latest version of iOS. I don't seem to have issues. So we're trying to troubleshoot it. Apple is working with me. So I'm asking for your help. If you have had issues or trouble either directly downloading or streaming the podcast from any of Apple's applications, iTunes or the new podcast app, and it's just streaming and downloading directly on the device. If you download through iTunes and sync over, it all goes fine. But occasionally people get that they can't download the podcast or they can't stream the podcast. If you've been getting that message, if you could send me some detailed information, basically which device you have, so iPod Touch, iPhone, which model iPhone, if it's an iPad, which model iPad, real specific details, the version of the operating system that you're running, whether you're downloading over Wi-Fi or 3G, and then where you're located, so your country, your city, state, that information, all of that I am going to compile together and sort of send to Apple so we can get a picture and maybe try and figure out what the common thread is. Because like I said, not everybody is having this issue, and we're hoping to find some sort of pattern to give the engineers an idea of where to look to get this fixed up. If you have run into the problem, the best fix that I have for you is to use one of the third-party apps. You can get Downcast, Instacast, Podcaster, those all seem to be able to stream and download directly on iOS devices just fine. Like I said, it just seems to be something with the Apple applications. The other alternative, of course, is to subscribe in iTunes, download there, and sync over. But I apologize for anybody who's been having trouble with that. We're really trying to get it fixed up, and if you could help us out, that would be really, really great. Beyond that, if you have any feedback for me, any comments, any questions, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode, please send your emails, your audio comments to maccast@gmail.com, or you can call in on the listener hotline. That's at 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9 is the phone number, and you can also leave a voicemail on Skype if you want to save on some long-distance charges. My Skype address is the MacCast, and be sure to check out the website. There you'll find the show notes and links to the items that we talked about in this or any other episode on the MacCast. You can also check out the forum while you're there. And if you'd like to follow me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/MacCast. And be sure to check out the Facebook page. That's at facebook.com/TheMacCast. That's it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.